At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Our DMs are filled with parents who, and I get it, like it's hard being a parent. And I think that, you know, in this day, especially, we have so much more information than our parents had before us. But I just wish that parents didn't stress perhaps so much on the things that really don't matter as much and are sort of taking that long view approach instead of that day-to-day, meal-to-meal hyper-focus that I think kind of takes a lot of the joy out of feeding.
You are listening to Veggie Doctor Radio, and this is episode number 151. Welcome to Veggie Doctor Radio. I am your host, Dr. Yami, board-certified pediatrician, certified lifestyle medicine physician, certified health and wellness coach, author, speaker, mother, wife, and human being. I passionately believe in the power of diet, habits, and mindset in sparking and sustaining well-being and joy in our lives. This podcast combines expert interviews and thoughtful monologues to explore plant-based nutrition, lifestyle medicine, parenting, mindset, and other exciting and fun topics. I hope that these episodes inspire you, uplift you, and equip you with the knowledge and tools to live your best life. Are you ready to get started? Let's do it. Well, hello, hello, veggie lovers. Welcome back to Veggie Doctor Radio. I have a really great episode for you today, especially if you're a parent and you want to learn more about micronutrients and how to feed your plant-based baby and toddler. We have on the show today Whitney English and Alexandra Gaspero, who are registered dietitian nutritionists, and they are going to be talking about their new book, The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler. Just a reminder that the information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, so it's not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment by your healthcare professional. So if you have concerns about you or your child's eating, nutrition, or growth, please talk to their doctor. So Whitney and Alex are registered dietitian nutritionists, certified personal trainers, moms, and the founders of the Plant-Based Juniors Community. PBJs is your complete guide to plant-based prenatal and pediatric nutrition. They are authors of First Bites, the predominantly plant-based pregnancy guide, and the Plant-Based Baby and Toddler. Now, this new book, The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler, is set to be released May 11th of 2021, but you can pre-order now. Pre-orders are open wherever books are sold, but if you go to their website, Plant-Based Juniors, you can get bonuses if you pre-order. So you're going to get 5 extra bonus recipes, but also what's even more amazing is that they have arranged for discounts that can add up to hundreds of dollars. So essentially, if you're going to buy some of these things already, like some supplements, special gear that you might need for feeding your baby, like bibs and plates and those kinds of things, then the book is going to essentially pay for itself. So go on over to plantbasedjuniors.com. Go to where it says books and the first one, The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler, and it'll take you to the page where you can sign up for your bonuses. So pre-order now, Book is not released until May 11th, but if you pre-order, you get extra goodies. So if you're going to get the book anyway, do it now. Get on the pre-order list. You're going to love this book, especially if you have a baby or a toddler, are planning to have a baby or a toddler. So if you're a pregnant plant-based mama, this book is for you as well. So what do we talk about in this interview? We talk about why they wrote this book, why they're raising their families in a predominantly plant-based way, and what that even means, what they think parents worry about the most when it comes to feeding their kids, what is the biggest misconception about raising a plant-based child, what parents might worry about that is unnecessary when it comes to feeding their children. We talk about choline and we talk about vitamin A because those are hot topics right now in the plant-based community. And then we talk about what micronutrients they recommend supplementing and how we can find out more about that. They have a special free guide through their website as well, and how you can find quality and reliable supplements and, you know, lots of great positive tips. I think if you are a plant-based parent, you're going to leave this episode feeling good, feeling reassured, empowered, and knowing where you can find the information so that you can raise your plant-based child in a confident way, not worried that they're going to be missing stuff and, you know, cover your bases. So without further ado, I can't wait for you to listen in to my conversation with Whitney and Alex from Plant-Based Juniors. Whitney and Alex, the very famous, wonderful, fantastic, amazing plant-based juniors, dietitians. Welcome to Veggie Doctor Radio.
Thank you.
What a nice intro.
Thank you.
Well, I do feel like y'all are superstars. I mean, for real. Okay, I'm just going to say,
same.
You're both beautiful and all of your children are all beautiful. And, you know, just everybody is so photogenic and the food. Like, my question is, before we get into the rest of these very important questions, which one of you is willing to adopt me as your child so that I can eat the food that you feed your kids? Because I would be totally happy with that.
You're going to want to move in with Alex.
She is the expert chef.
That's probably true. But also, I was going to say, you don't know what we do to our sweet children to get them to smile. Like, the behind the scenes is also comical for the photo shoots we do where it's like, I mean, yes. So
a lot of the time it looks like they're smiling and laughing and they're actually bawling.
You should totally do a behind the scenes, like what it took to get this picture of your. Oh, but yes. They're so cute though. I love them. And they're little
so funny.
Hands.
I actually sent a picture to Alex once, and you know how you can hold it down and you can see what was like actually happening. And it's like me running into the frame, like shaking Caleb so he'll smile. She's like, that's how you get him to smile.
But it worked and it was a cute photo. So
it was worth it, right?
These are the secrets.
The secrets of PBJ.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so you guys just wrote a fabulous book. I'm so honored to have been able to read a version of it. What a great resource. Thank you so much for writing this. I want to hear from each of you. Why did you write this? I know that it was many years in the making. So tell me how this idea even started.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was the book that really is the reason that PBJs exist. You know, it was the resource that Whitney and I were looking for and couldn't find. You know, when we both became pregnant and were starting to really think about raising our kids, we felt like the things that were out in the market currently were either, you know, something that was like, don't worry about it. If you're plant-based, you don't have to worry about a thing. Everything kind of takes care of itself. Or it was, you can't raise your kids this way. You know, you have to introduce animal products. And we just felt like we know that neither one of those things are correct, but we couldn't find sort of the evidence-based resource that made us as dietitians feel confident and empowered. So we really set out to write the book that we were looking for. And I'm happy to say we did.
Yay. I'm a very obsessive type A dietitian. So when I want to know the answer.
Yes, she is.
Very obsessive. When I want to know the answer to something, I will dig deep, 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 deep into the research. And there were a few questions that I had both during pregnancy and while raising my son that I absolutely could not find an answer to in any available lay literature. So I went down the rabbit hole to get to the bottom of some of these issues. And the fact that it was so hard for me to find what should be pretty simple answers to pretty basic questions that all plant-based parents need to know showed us that there was no good place for people who aren't nutrition experts to go to get these answers. So that's why we were like, we got to put this information out there.
Do you feel like the personality type of a dietitian is like that anyway? Like, do you feel like dietitians yes. like numbers and like, you know, like you're a little bit more detail-oriented?
Detail-oriented, yes.
100%.
Which is good. I'm glad you exist.
Somebody's
and so thank you for doing that background work for us, because I'm not that kind of person. So, okay. So let's take a couple of steps back and talk about why each of you have decided to go down this road anyway for yourselves and your own families and children.
Sure. So I went predominantly plant-based. That's the term that Alex and I use, about 6 years ago. Prior to that, I was a protein and animal protein obsessed fitness junkie who really didn't know anything about nutrition. And then I went back to school and got educated. And it was in my program that I learned about the massive amount of research supporting a plant-based diet and really all different types of plant-based diets for longevity and chronic disease prevention. And so that's what turned me. And since going predominantly plant-based, I've learned so much more about the ethical side of this way of eating, about animal cruelty, about climate change, about the environment. Mm-hmm. And that's all factored into my decision to eat this way and to raise my family this way as well.
Yeah, and I'm pretty similar. I mean, I've never been a huge meat eater. I sort of dabbled in vegetarianism in high school, and then really in college is when I decided to stop eating meat. And funny enough, when I met my husband, you know, his parents are dairy farmers. He's from Wisconsin. And so, you know, when I met them, I mean, I think my mother-in-law was like, wait, you don't eat what? You know, she had no idea what to do. And my husband was, you know, very heavy, like, meat and protein, meat and potatoes sort of person. And over the years together, I mean, that was, you know, 14, 15 years ago, we've both sort of adapted this way. He now has completely cut out all meat. He still eats a little bit of cheese. But anyways, I knew from that it was sort of a no-brainer that we would raise our kids this way. Just awesome. Sort of for all the reasons Whitney said, you know, I feel like, especially at this time in this life, you know, we can't just focus on human health, but planetary health is also so important. And especially sort of raising this next generation, it just feels like, you know, this is so aligned with what I believe and also the world I want to leave for my children. So this is the right path for us.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I feel like whichever route you come to it from, you learn about the other things too, you know? Totally. So I think a lot of us, especially in this space, we came to it because of the health reasons and the literature and the evidence yes. showing that this was a good way to live a long, healthy life. But it's almost impossible not to learn about everything else associated with it. And then you just have more mental space after that. You make that first mm-hmm. step, and then you have this mental space that you learn about all these other issues as well. So you're very careful to say predominantly plant-based. What does mm-hmm. that mean to you?
Yeah, so predominantly plant-based is a term that we coined really to encompass the evidence that shows that all walks of plant-based lifestyles are beneficial for human health. So the research shows that vegans, vegetarians, flexitarians, pescatarians, no matter what kind of plant-based diet you follow, there are health benefits, and it is superior to eating a traditional animal heavy diet. And as Alex just stated, we are not in this just for nutrition. We're also in this to save the planet, just that lofty goal. And again, the research really supports that we need everybody eating less animal products. We need everyone to reduce their meat intake. So while we totally commend people who can make the jump to a fully plant-based diet or a vegan diet, which is more of an ethical, which is an ethical term actually, instead of a nutrition term, we want to be as inclusive as possible to really make that global change, to really get more people on board. Because if we're going right out the bat and suggesting people go completely plant-based, it's just not as successful from what we know from from studies of diets that people who take a black and white approach to most eating patterns often are unsuccessful in the long term. So, you know, we think a slow approach, like you just detailed, you know, making baby steps, adding to your breadth of knowledge about the topic and going as far plant-based as that takes you, can be a good approach for most people.
Alex, did you have anything to add?
No, I think she summed it up well. I think it's sort of like the, you know, the wider net sort of catches more people. And I think that especially for when we come at it from a raising children point of view, I think if you're sort of like, yeah, I've heard about the health benefits of plant-based eating, you know, I've sort of seen over and over again this sort of predominant plant-based pattern and how beneficial it is for so many aspects of chronic disease and just overall health, but not quite sold on raising my kids quote unquote vegan or 100% plant-based, I think that it's much more appealing to say, oh yeah, I can eat this way, you know, most of the time, or I don't have to worry so much when they're over at grandma's house or when they're, you know, at daycare or whatever. I think it's just a more inclusive way. And we found that when we talked to our readers, you know, there we definitely have a lot of a vegan or strict plant-based eaters, but we also have a lot of people who just say, I'm really curious in this way of eating. I know I want to do more of this, and I know I want to do this sort of for the whole family.
Yeah. And even your book, you talk about what the literature shows and what the evidence is anyway, that there's no evidence shows that you have to be 100% this way in order to have health benefits and also planetary benefits and all that stuff, you know, aligns with that as well. But well, I agree.
I think animal sort of ethics and welfare aside, I think that for a lot of people, it feels like, okay, that means if I eat this way for most of the time, but I don't have to completely quote unquote give up, you know, the occasional animal-based food, I think that is a much more palatable response for a lot of people. And, you know, like Whitney said, like we've got to move fast, you know, especially when we think about what the UN reports are coming out and all of the, you know, sort of scary climate science that we're seeing. I wish that we were sort of further along as a population, but we're not. And we know actually that meat intake tends to increase depending on sort of what population that you're looking at in the past couple of years. So I think that really sort of having this message of more plants more often is just, again, just resonates with a larger population.
And at the end of the day, there are just so many unknowns in science in general, but specifically in nutrition science, which is a young science. But one thing that everyone can agree on is that more fruits and vegetables are more beneficial. More plants are more beneficial. This is something that's indisputable and that we can all get on board with.
And I just really love meeting people where they are. Because for some of us, it's realistic to be able to go 100%. Like we have the resources, we have the knowledge, we have access. And for some people, it's not. And so giving them a place where they can feel the self-efficacy to be like, wow, I'm only eating meat twice a week now. And I used to eat it three times a day. I mean, that could be a huge deal for them. I also found that some people with different personality types hate labels. Like they just don't want to be labeled in any way. My dad's one of them. He's downstairs, so I can't talk too loud. But anyway, he doesn't want to call himself any of those things. And so some people may just be like, you know, I don't eat much meat, or I eat a lot of plants, and they don't really want to say I'm plant-based or I'm vegan or I'm any of these terms, reducetarian, pescatarian, whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And so I think we have to realize that everybody's different, and how can we create something so that we can reach common goals for our health, for the planet, for the animals, and just for happiness and well-being. Because I'm all about feeling good.
It takes the factor of shame out of it.
Yes.
For a lot of people, when they start a new eating pattern, they're either on or they're off. Mm-hmm. And that creates a lot of shame when you eat a food that's so-called off your diet and causes most people to completely go in the opposite direction to backfire. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I've been, I used to be vegan. I used to be vegetarian. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't have to be one way or another. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just start a pattern of eating and it can ebb and flow based on your lifestyle?
Yes. I love that so much. It's so true. Okay. Raising kids is a whole nother thing though. I mean, like, as both of you know, we have ourselves, we can handle ourselves. We're cool. You know, there's still the distress that comes with feeding yourself. You have kids and it's like to the next level. Anxiety, fear, anger, you know, like, I mean, they're every emotion.
All in one.
Joy. Of course, joy, you know, it's funny. It's fun too. But one thing that I love about your account is that you do work with parents and then you help them, you help guide them through this. So, but first of all, I want to know, with your experience, what do you think parents worry about the most when it comes to raising plant-based kids?
I think it's the same as if you're raising omnivore kids. You know, I think sometimes we take this line of like, well, if you're plant-based, if you're omnivore, but a lot of times the concerns, you know, especially the nutrient concerns and just parental concerns are the same. And that is making sure you're raising your kids, quote unquote, healthy, right? And there's a lot of ways that can be. But I think that so many parents, and I think especially, you know, when we look back on sort of our own childhood, we have so many parents who will say things like, I was so picky for so long. I don't want that for my child. Or, you know, I ate this way for so long and I don't want that for my child. And I think a lot of times it's sort of that course correction, but also just, you know, how do we sort of get them started on the right foot? And I think that's true for an omnivore or a plant-based parent.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the biggest misconception is about raising plant-based kids specifically?
I think one of the biggest irrational fears that we hear is that they're not going to get enough protein. Would probably be one of the top concerns. And I don't know if you've covered this on the podcast before, but that's just a ridiculous claim when you look at the nutrient composition of plants and realize that protein, all 9 essential amino acids to be specific, are found in really every single whole plant food. And that it takes a mere 2 cups of soy milk to meet the protein needs for a 1 to 3-year-old toddler. And that's without even taking into account their food for the day. So that's one that we get a lot. And then other various nutrients.
Yeah, I think the other thing, and I kind of alluded to it in the beginning, but I do see this a lot in the plant-based community, is this idea that, you know, oh, if you're plant-based, you don't have to worry. And I think that one thing that we try to really talk about with parents is, look, you know, well-planned diets, every child needs to be on a quote-unquote well-planned diet, right? I mean, just because you're eating McDonald's and, you know, fruit snacks doesn't mean necessarily you're getting all the nutrients you need because you're including animal products. But at the same time, just because you're eating a more plant-based diet doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting all of the nutrients you need either. And I think sometimes we really try to educate around the idea that supplements are not 4-letter words, especially if your child is not eating certain things. A lot of our foods are naturally fortified. And if your child is not eating those things, you need to find either a plant-based fortified source or a supplement. And that does not mean that you are not doing it, quote unquote, right. But, you know, we do need to be aware of certain nutrients and they can be harder to find, especially with smaller bellies and, you know, smaller preferred appetites, right? I mean, my son's not going to eat 3 cups of broccoli a day to get all of his calcium from that, even though he could, if he was, you know, if he was willing to do that. He's just not, you know, if I can get him to eat a half cup, that's a win. So, you know, not being afraid of fortified options, just to make sure that you are getting the nutrients you need. And that does not mean that you're quote unquote failing or that you're doing it wrong. It just means that you're being a really good advocate for what your child needs.
Yeah. Recognizing that even omnivorous diets have supplementation involved, yes, whether you know it or not. Whether it's that vitamin D that's fortified in the cow's milk that you're providing or the iodine that got into that cow's milk one way or another. Mm-hmm. So
I love that you guys brought this up, because when I started my Nutrients of Concern series last year, I went over fortification because it's been part of the American food system for so long that we take it for granted and it's invisible to us, right? Yes. And what I didn't realize, because, you know, I live in the United States, is that not all countries do this, but we've been doing it since the 1920s and putting things into food that we just assume would have been there. And it's not. Vitamin D is a good example. Iodine is a good example. But even things like iron that I know you guys talk about in your book. So I think it's important for people to know that, because otherwise there's this whole it's natural, it's not natural argument, which I think is kind of moot anyway, you know, agreed, because agreed. There's a lot of things that are natural, yes, including death when you're a baby, yes, you know what, right, I'm saying? So we don't necessarily always want to do what's natural. Sanitation.
An entire section in our intro that covers that whole argument about it's not natural. And we go through one by one talking about the specific nutrients and what their natural origins are. And the ultimate conclusion that we come to is that like you said, it's a moot point. Does it matter if it's natural or not? Nothing in our modern society is natural anymore. Mm-hmm. What matters now is that it's doable, it's sustainable, it's healthy, and it's beneficial for both people and the planet. So yes, whether or not our caveman ancestors were doing it exactly the way we're doing it now, it doesn't matter. We don't need meat anymore. We're not having a hard time finding food. The reverse is true. Right.
Yeah, I don't think I want to go live in a cave right now. I love air conditioning. I love it.
Yeah.
I love my fireplace and showers. So
my Netflix.
So you know, there's a lot of things that, and so basically that being said, it's just to help people feel a little bit better about how we do that in our, it doesn't make you a bad mm-hmm. mom.
No,
to use fortified foods. It doesn't make you a bad mom to supplement things. You know, we can't be expected to be able to meet everything just by eating fruits and vegetables or whatever, you know? So thanks for bringing that up.
We wouldn't have so many nutrient deficient toddlers if it was that easy to meet nutrient needs just through diet.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about, as far as like other things that you see that parents worry about, you kind of touched on this, Alex, that, you know, kids sometimes don't eat very much or eat more some days than others. Do you find that parents worry unnecessarily about how kids eat or how kids' eating changes over time?
Yes. I mean, I'm a parent too, right? I've got a toddler who, I mean, he's 3.5, and I don't think anyone who's ever fed a 3.5-year-old for a long period of time would call it like easy breezy. You know, I mean, there are fun, different, unique challenges and fun things, you know, depending on the day. But I think that a lot of times what we hear from our parents is like, you know, at this meal, he didn't eat this, or he didn't eat enough, or and it's like, look, nutrition essentially is a long game, right? I mean, my child might not get quote unquote the amount of iron that he needs in one day, but that's okay. You know, he might make it up the next day, or, you know, it's really about sort of what is the usual pattern. And that's really what we try to tell parents is it's what matters most of the time that matters. You know, it's not these individual meals. I think the other night my son only had like, you know, one bite of his avocado toast and like 10 strawberries for dinner. Is that nutritionally complete? No. You know, is that anything that I'd be like, oh, this is sort of what I would recommend all parents to be? No. But that's what happened. That was, you know, what his appetite was. And I think that it's really about sort of like letting that stress go and also knowing like what your role is. We talk a lot about the division of responsibility and feeding in our book. And I think to me, it's just sort of this really big like aha of what I'm responsible in doing and what my child is. And as long as I know that I'm meeting his needs as far as offering healthful foods, offering them often, offering them at set meals and snack times, I don't have to stress so much about how much he's eating and what foods he's trying to put into his body.
Yeah, you really got to take a global perspective. Take a look back at the totality of the diet. And I will say as a caveat, if your child is not growing according to their growth curve, or if they have a diagnosed nutrient deficiency, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But if your child is healthy, they're growing properly, their pediatrician is giving you the thumbs up, and you don't need to be obsessing about every single plate. You're going to miss the big picture.
Yeah, yeah. And Whitney brings up a good point too. You know, we don't want to necessarily generalize, because there are pediatric issues that happen, and we want to make sure we're sort of catching them early. If your mom gut or parent gut is sort of telling you like, something's really changed, he's liking less and less foods, he's not eating very much, then obviously we want you to discuss that with your pediatrician. But sort of for the average child who is growing according to their growth chart, a lot of these things, sort of the day-to-day things, we just don't worry about too much, as long as the overall shift is positive.
And the problem when you get too obsessive about individual meals and picky eating in general, which I'll say research shows is completely normal, the majority of kids from actually 2 to all the way up to 6 years old are going to experience picky eating. When you obsess too much about the specific plate, then your behavior starts to change. Mm-hmm. And you start putting pressure on your child, whether or not you want to and whether or not you know it. And that is going to defeat your ultimate goal in the long run. So like Alex said, it's a long game. You may get them to eat all of their nutrients that are on that plate in that meal. But what is going to happen long term is that they're going to be pushing back against that, pushing back against you and your feeding patterns. And when you're not there to force feed them, all of their nutrients in each meal, they're not going to choose to eat them on their own. So we're really working not only to implement proper nutrition, but to instill positive behaviors that will carry over throughout their life.
Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited process ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with limited process ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. Choose from 80 plus flavor packed options and take back time in your kitchen with dinner ready in 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. Green Chef will deliver everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, some produce which is pre-chopped, and custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide the recipe cards, and the meals are really simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. We've really enjoyed using Green Chef, trying out all the delicious recipes, as well as saving time. It takes a lot of the work out of planning meals and gathering the proper ingredients so that you can just cook and enjoy your meal. It's a great option for busy families that want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table. And I know a lot of us worry about waste, and we do everything we can to reduce waste. So this may be one of your hesitations when subscribing to this type of service. Well, Green Chef also cares about the planet. April is Earth Month, and sustainability is a core to the Green Chef brand. Green Chef offsets 100% of delivery emissions and 100% of plastic in each box. Green Chef also partners with Plastic Bank to collect ocean-bound plastic pound for pound for every box they deliver. If you're frustrated by lack of time to eat healthy and you are ready to try Green Chef and see how easily you can integrate it into your healthy lifestyle, go to greenchef.com/IAMHuman50, that's IAMHuman50, and use code IAMHuman50, IAMHuman50, to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. So go to greenchef.com/IAMHuman50 and use code IAMHuman50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. I know you're busy. So am I. But do you have 2 minutes? If you have just 2 minutes, you have enough time to eat healthy, nutritious meals. The solution to your overscheduled life is Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. These meals are chef-crafted, fresh, and never frozen, and they are delivered straight to your doorstep. They offer a weekly menu of 35 options, including vegan and veggie meals. They also have 60 add-ons each week, including breakfast, snacks, and beverages like smoothies and juices. The fresh juice shots are so good. This week, I got to try the peanut Buddha bowl that had sweet potatoes, broccoli, quinoa, veggies, and a yummy peanut sauce, and the tangy citrus tofu bowl that included cauliflower rice, sweet potato, tofu, edamame, chickpeas, and a tangy citrus sauce. They were super yummy. My husband and my son loved them too. The meals feature premium ingredients, and because they are fully prepared and ready to heat, it eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. It's an amazing option for those seasons in life that are particularly time constrained. You can also pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. In April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long and will use Earth Month Eats badges on their lowest carbon footprint meals. Are you ready to try Factor? Head to factormeals.com/DrYami50, that's DrYami50, and use code DrYami50. That's DrYami50, and get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code DrYami50 at factormeals.com/DrYami50. That's DrYami50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with products intended to bring your mind and body back in harmony. They consider themselves a by women and for women company, and they now offer a nutrient-dense green powder called Daily NutriGreens. Myself and my staff here at Nourish Wellness all tried the Daily NutriGreens and we loved it. The Daily NutriGreens contain an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. It also contains other important nutrients such as B12, iron, zinc, and selenium. The Daily Greens are certified organic and all you have to do is mix it with water, but you can also easily add to your smoothies, your oatmeal, or your baked goods. The Daily NutriGreens are vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO. And another bonus is that the packaging is compostable. Yay! When I tried the apple banana Daily NutriGreens, I was surprised by the pleasant and mild flavor. It was easy to prepare and drink and didn't leave any aftertaste. And I felt great afterwards. It's really easy to create a daily ritual around your green drink. Integrate it into your daily self-care routine. A green powder is one way to fill the gap in daily nutrition and is an easy and convenient way to get in your greens. These powders are a great way to add more nutrients into your diet during busy times, travel, and transitions in life when you don't have time or access to fresh green veggies. If you're interested in trying Equilibria's Daily NutriGreens, head to myeq.com and use code DRYAMI, that's DRYAMI, for 15% off Equilibria's Daily NutriGreens and much more. That's myeq.com and use code DRYAMI, DRYAMI, at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. And now for a very important message. Hey, veggie lover, if you are looking for free resources to guide you on your plant-based and healthy living journey, go to dryami.com/free for tons of free downloadable PDFs. Hundreds of people have taken advantage of my tips to help them reduce meat and dairy consumption, navigate eating out, and build satisfying plant-based meals. Download one or download them all. And don't forget to share with friends and family. DrYami.com/free. And now back to the episode.
Yes. And feeding should be fun. Mealtime should be fun. You know, I can't imagine any of us want to sit down with someone who's, you know, overly anxious about what we're about to eat or look at us every time we put something in our mouth and say, did you like it? Do you want more? Is it good? I mean, that's awful. That's not a positive experience. And so I think that if we can just sort of say like, look, let's step back. Let's let your child sort of like play and explore and have those experiences when it comes to feeding. Yes, it's about nutrition, but also healthy eating is also about your sort of, you know, healthy relationship with food and enjoying coming to the table and enjoying those foods and not feeling like, oh yeah, my mom always used to make me eat that. You know, that sort of comes into that power struggle and rebellion.
And I will acknowledge that you may have to become an actress because, as I said in the beginning, I'm an anxious type A dietitian. And so I might want to cheer every time my son tries a veggie that he wouldn't before or cringe when he completely throws a meal off his plate. But, you know, I got to keep that stone wall face going, not let him know what's going on underneath.
Yeah. And I tell parents, because it's hard, you know, we're all moms here. So we know that sometimes, you know, that mom look comes out. So I tell moms at the beginning when they're practicing this, sometimes you have to get up from the table and be like, oh, I forgot something in the kitchen, you know, and go take a deep breath and come back, you know.
And we're not saying this is easy. You know, we're in there too. We know, God, there's so many times I just want to be like, eat it. Just take a bite. But, you know, I just have to not. And so I say that meaning like we know this advice is sometimes harder to implement than it sounds, but it really is the best approach.
But also for each mom to give herself grace. My kids are already 11 and 16, and it does not completely go away. I'm sorry to tell you guys. So, but, you know, it gets easier. And with practice, you get better at it. But I say the same as y'all. What I tell my families is it's not meal to meal or even day to day. It's more week to week and month to month. The overall structure, the overall balance, the overall intake of your diet. Because as a pediatrician, I know how many things changes appetite too. Like when kids get sick and they get a cold, parents freak out. They're not eating. It's okay. It'll rebound. Just keep them hydrated. You know, I say it all the time. Then their appetite comes back and they're just like monsters. Like they're putting stuff down. And when they go through growth spurts, when my older one went through a growth spurt, I didn't know how to keep enough food in the house, you know, like so much intake. So some of that is about trusting them. And that's where that division of responsibilities, intuitive eating, but also going back and learning how to trust ourselves. Because the more I've learned how to trust my own appetite, the more I've realized, you know, during the month, as my cycle changes, there's some days I'm not that hungry and some days I need to eat almost twice what I did the day before. And it's not because there's something wrong with me. It's because that is what my body is asking me to do. Totally. Our kids do the exact same thing. So whenever you start tuning into your own body, you realize it fluctuates. And that's why their appetite fluctuates too. Or if you're just like really active one day, and you know how kids are, they never stop, you know? So
yeah, and Alex and I talk about this in the book, like you can't give your child what you don't have yourself. This is Alex's favorite quote.
It is my favorite
quote. If you don't have a positive relationship with food yourself, you're not going to be able to give that to your child. And we have a whole section about different parenting styles and how, you know, we were both raised with authoritarian parents. We love you moms, but they were authoritarian and, you know, they pushed the fruits and veggies on us. They were very obsessive and we're working to course correct and not implement those, that same type of tactics ourselves.
Yeah. And it's all done through love, right? I mean, I think we all,
of course,
we all do the best we can with what we have right now. And in the past, our parents and grandparents did, and we just learn a better way and we practice a better way and we do the best we can moving forward. That's all great information. Thank you so much. Well, let's move on to a couple of nutrients that I want to hear from my type A detail oriented experts, please, so that I know how to answer these questions the next time I get asked on a podcast. So the first one is choline. Why is this a concern? Since when has this been a concern? And what do I need to be worried about? Because I don't even know what to worry about when it comes to choline. Of course, we know studies with eggs and TMAO and all this stuff. So tell me what we need to know about choline, when we need to worry about it.
There's still so much to learn about choline. It only kind of like popped up in the on the map like in the past 10 years. And the bulk of the research has been funded by companies that make choline supplements. So choline is a B-like vitamin. It's really important for baby's brain development. We know that we need it in pregnancy and while breastfeeding. And really during those periods of rapid brain growth. But there isn't a whole lot of research on it, and some of it's conflicting. Some say that it doesn't really matter what you eat in your diet, that the same levels are maintained in the breast milk. Other studies show that, that about 50% of pregnant women, regardless of their diet, are not consuming enough choline. And then there's the issue that you talked about, which is this paradox with choline, where we know that it's beneficial for brain growth, but there's also studies in adults showing that consuming choline, choline is transformed by our gut microbiome and then by our liver to this carcinogenic molecule called trimethylamine oxide, TMAO. So what do we do with all this information? Alex and I, we did what we do, and we did a deep dive into the research. And what we've come to our conclusion is that, yes, choline may be potentially detrimental, specifically from the food sources that it's found in animal products, eggs later in life due to these associations with TMAO and cardiovascular disease. But it's so important for prenatal health, breastfeeding, and early childhood that we do want to prioritize getting it in your diet, either via whole foods or via supplements. And because of that, a lot of prenatal vitamin makers are now including some choline in their multivitamins. However, it's usually not enough to make any type of dent in your choline intake. Unfortunately, the main message that we're getting from the egg industry and other groups is that really the only way to meet choline needs is by eating animal products. And that's partially true, not entirely true. Eggs are a very good source of choline. They've got about 150 milligrams, and a pregnant woman needs, correct me if I'm getting these numbers wrong off the top of my head, 450 milligrams of choline, and a breastfeeding mama needs about 550. Might be slightly off on those. But so you can see how eggs would be a helpful way to meet that. But there's choline widespread in all plant foods, at least small amounts. And certain foods like tofu or soybeans specifically, for example, or wheat germ, are a very good source of choline. What throws a wrench into all of this and complicates is that choline is not a part of, has not been, choline amounts in foods have not been integrated very well into the USDA nutrient database. So we actually don't even know the choline content of all foods. So that it makes it really complicated to make recommendations on what foods to eat and what foods don't have choline. We have one chart that was established, I believe it was by some researchers at Chapel Hill. And that's really the only paper that we have that's giving choline amounts. So choline's a tricky, it makes the whole choline issue very complicated. But in our book, actually, I went through and using all of those amounts and put together a sample meal plan for a two-year-old that would give you all of the choline that you need in a day entirely from plant foods. And the reassuring information from all of that is because there are small amounts in all plant foods, that your kid is likely getting enough. And as a form of insurance during pregnancy and breastfeeding, we do recommend that strict plant-based moms supplement with about half of the RDA for choline. But again, it's just like anything else, you're taking that multivitamin as a form of insurance, and it's not based on whether you're a plant-based eater or you're an omnivore. It's all women should be taking a little bit extra as a form of insurance.
Got it. So from what you have seen in the research and what we have available for choline amounts, we should be able to get enough, or the children, little toddler should be able to get enough choline from plants.
Yes, yeah. But we recommend prioritizing soy foods because those are currently the best plant-based source that we know of. Mm-hmm. There may be other really good sources and we just haven't sussed those out just yet.
Yeah, I think our bottom line is that, look, you know, we know that choline is such a critical nutrient for brain development. It's why it's prioritized so much in pregnancy and lactation. We would assume then, you know, in sort of the early infancy, early toddlerhood years, that it's also important. But we don't see any reason, any evidence to why we should supplement during that. You can just focus on getting it through food sources. And like Whitney said, it's another reason that we like soy milk as sort of the best option after formula or breast milk, just because of lots of reasons, but also because it does contain choline and the other plant-based milks out there don't.
And there's really no research on choline deficiency in children. So there's nothing that we can go off of right now to make definitive recommendations other than just saying, try to eat a varied plant-based diet that includes soy foods.
And I just want to clarify this too, because sometimes we'll get a follow-up question. We do not recommend choline supplementation at this point for any adult except for pregnancy or lactation. And like Whitney said, that's because of that TMAO consideration. So we don't think there's enough evidence to show that, but sort of in those specific periods of time, we think that there is enough pros to say, you know, this is sort of a window where supplementation is likely a good option. We both did it. We recommend doing it. But then after you've weaned your child off, then you can stop. And we don't recommend continuing it.
Yeah, the benefits outweigh the risk during that time period.
Exactly.
Okay, got it. Okay, so the next one is vitamin A. I'm really confused about this. So everybody's getting really upset about vitamin A and how plant-based eaters aren't converting enough and all of this stuff. So please explain this to me. Because one thing I know as a pediatrician is that when babies start to eat complementary foods, especially when they're eating sweet potatoes and carrots, they all turn orange and they get carotenemia. It seems to me like they're absorbing beta carotene. So I mean, like, that's just my common sense, but I might be wrong. So tell me about vitamin A. Do we need to be concerned if we're plant-based that we're not getting enough intake of that?
Well, there was a recent study about vegan kids with the concern that despite I believe they thought they were getting the adequate intake based on food frequency questionnaires, and then their serum levels were not reflecting that. And so they were concerned about whether they were converting it. I think the problem with that study is, I'm not saying to discount food frequency questionnaires. They're our number one, they're the most widely used assessment tool in many nutrition research studies. But I think the issue, especially when it comes to kids, is that what we think our kid is eating and what we say our kid is eating or what the daycare center reports your child ate may not match up with reality. And in that study specifically, this was based in a bunch of daycare centers. So it's likely that the caretakers were saying, oh, we served carrots at lunch. You know, we serve 4 carrots, and it's a very small amount of foods that are rich in carotenoids, which are what converts to provitamin A in the body. You need a very small amount to meet your needs. So it's likely that a daycare center could report that a child had two baby carrots, and that's enough to say they met their needs, when in reality, maybe the kid didn't eat the baby carrots at all. So I feel like that could be one of the issues with that particular study, because it's actually contradictory to what the research shows and what the DRIs were actually based upon, was that enough of these precursors to vitamin A, these carotenoids, if you eat them in the correct amounts, that they will convert to the active vitamin A in the body just the same. They will convert in the breast milk, and that there's really not a biological need for active retinol. So my long-winded way of saying that, yes, if you are eating these vitamin A carotenoid-rich plants, like your sweet potatoes, like your carrots, persimmons, basically anything that's this really brightly colored red and orange fruits or vegetables, and also leafy greens, that you will make enough vitamin A. There's a caveat here, however. A lot of kids, and in the toddler ages, maybe when you're not feeding them with a spoon and feeding them their sweet potatoes or their carrot puree, they might actually not eat any of those things in the day. There's so many days when my son does not touch a vegetable, most days. And so you do kind of have to be a little bit cognizant of that. So once you realize that that's an issue, it's really easy to get around. So like I said, just a fourth cup of any of those brightly colored orange fruits or vegetables, like the carrot, the sweet potato, the pumpkin, that can meet your kids' needs for the day. So knowing that, we highlighted carotenoids on our PB3 plate. Our PB3 plate is a plate model that we created for parents that they can visually represents how to properly plan a plant-based plate. And you can download that for free on our website. And carotenoids are a call-out item in the fruits and vegetables section. So if you're providing a wide array of those things, it's likely that your child will easily meet their needs. You just have to kind of be thinking about it. So swirl a little pumpkin in their oatmeal, yep. Make some sweet potato fries for lunch if they like them.
Mango is a good source of vitamin A, which a lot of kids tend to like. You can add that to smoothies with carrots to make sort of like a sunshine, you know, smoothie. So
it isn't hard. And especially for an adult, it's just a no-brainer. If you're eating a plant-based diet, you're probably getting it, because most adults have a greater, wider palate than a child.
Well, and I just want to say once again, you know, if you sort of look at an omnivore diet, vitamin A is added to cow's milk. It doesn't naturally occur there. So, you know, we're adding this in, and that's where a lot of kids get it. And so you'll hear things like, oh, well, you're not getting enough vitamin A. Well, yeah, but they're getting it from a fortified source as well. So, you know, we sort of are food first and like to sort of say that it is so abundant in so many plant-based foods, and just offering them to your child often and figuring out the ones that, you know, he really likes and eats often is sort of what we recommend.
Yeah. And then just going back to what you said earlier, Whitney, about how nutrition science is young, and there's a lot of things that I feel as a pediatrician, because I look at things in a big picture, right? So whenever this vitamin A thing came up, I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what does vitamin A deficiency even look like? Like, what's going on here?
What does it look like? It looks like blindness.
That's not happening. Like, you know, it's just not happening. So, yeah. Well, at we least don't see in my patients that eat this way, you know? And so I guess part of it too is taking a step back and realizing sometimes that we do sometimes get into this microscopic, theoretical, you know, we're trying to do our best. And then going back to, if your child is really getting very selective, and you know in your mama heart that they're just down to like five foods and they refuse to eat anything else, we may have a problem there. But yeah, if your child generally eats a variety of foods, even if they're not eating something orange every single day, then it's probably okay when it comes to some of these, especially that we don't have that much information about, because really I'm not seeing that.
Yeah, it's fat soluble. I mean, it's not something that you have to make sure you're eating every single day. Like, you know, and again, I don't want any parent to listen to this and be like, oh my gosh, my kid hasn't eaten kale or sweet potato in 2 years. You know, like it's not about focusing so much on, I mean, these nutrients are important, right? We're not going to discount that, but we don't want you to be obsessed or take out your calculator for every meal and,
you know, put everything that your child eats in a chronometer and figure out, like that's not what we do, and we're dietitians, and we definitely don't recommend that unless you feel like, you know, you're really trying to assess something for a specific period of time. But, you know, for the general time period, and we, that's just not something that we'd ever recommend doing.
Yeah. It's totally a balance. I think being aware, learning the information, knowing what's important, what we have to be mindful about, but also at the other end, not micromanaging, right? So it's like this constant balance of life and motherhood. So, but that gives me lots of information going forward. So I appreciate that. So when it comes to specific micronutrients that you recommend supplementing for the average plant-based family, what would those be?
So we have a free supplement guide on our website, and I preface this sort of answer by saying that because if anyone's listening to this, you don't have to sort of get out your pen and paper. We have a guide that goes into all of this, the different dosing recommendations based on age, and then also our favorite products. None of that is sponsored. It's just really a sort of, hey, this is what sort of meets our standards. These are the ones that we like. And also, these are the ones that are 100% plant-based, because for certain nutrients like vitamin D, for example, it can be hard to find an option that is going to be safe for an infant that's also not lanolin-based, which is the animal derived source. So we recommend vitamin D for all exclusively breastfed babies. That is what the AAP recommends. And again, if we think back to sort of how we were once upon a time, we were outside. We were converting vitamin D through our skin, and we're just not doing that anymore. And I say that because sometimes we'll get questions from parents who will say, gosh, that doesn't seem natural to have to supplement my child right from birth. And it's because, again, we don't live these natural lives that we once did. It does not mean that your breast milk is insufficient. It just means that you're not putting your baby outside, you know, half naked for a good part of the day to get enough vitamin D that they need. So supplementing 400 IUs of vitamin D that first year. If you're breastfeeding, the AAP also does recommend considering iron supplementation sort of before you start solids. And again, the reason is because our iron stores are built up in utero and they start to decline around 4 to 6 months of age. We start to introduce solids around there. But, you know, if your baby's having a hard time eating perhaps or isn't catching on to starting solids, you may want to consider talking to your pediatrician about an iron supplement to help boost that level. And then if you're formula fed, they will get the iron they need through that source. And then after one, the nutrients we're really concerned about specifically for plant-based eaters are B12. B12 is only reliably found in animal-based foods. It is found in some fortified foods. Our hesitation with recommending a fortified option for that is that, as we just mentioned a few times in this conversation, kids' appetites and preferences change so much. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes my kid is scarfing down smoothies and other times he doesn't want any milk. Well, if I was only relying on the B12 in that fortified milk product, there are some days where he just wouldn't get enough. And so we just think it's sort of a more conservative option to offer B12 daily. There is some good enough research, I would say, to say that we feel comfortable recommending, you know, adults to sort of supplement with larger doses weekly or biweekly, but we just don't have enough of that evidence for kids, and therefore we recommend a daily supplementation of B12. Vitamin D continuously. Again, you can find that in fortified foods, but depending on how much milk perhaps your child is drinking, you may not be able to get enough depending on the brand. The other thing we do recommend is half the RDA of iodine. And again, if we think about where iodine is typically found in an omnivore diet, it is in milk, but it's not naturally occurring. The reason iodine is there is because of the way that we sterilize the milk udders and the equipment that we use to milk cows. And that iodized solution gets into the milk. So it's not naturally occurring, but that's how it gets in there. And that's how most omnivore children get enough iodine. Iodine is also found in better amounts in seafood. But if you're not eating either of those things, then we do recommend half the RDA of iodine. And that's also because there is iodine in some plant-based foods. And then lastly, the other thing that you may want to consider is DHA. Whitney and I both believe that there's enough research to sort of show that there is a positive benefit for supplementing with DHA the first couple years of life. After that, the results are really mixed. And we say that also because we know that DHA tends to be a more expensive supplement compared to the others. And so that can be an expense for a lot of families. again, we think that if you can get it and if you can afford it, you know, there's enough of a benefit those first 2 years or so of life. After that, we don't say that you have to do it or that that's even something that we really recommend, just because the research really isn't there to support that. Did I miss anything? Awesome.
Do you guys have an easy direct link to the guide?
We do. It's in our Instagram bio.
And, okay. and you
if you
may
just click on that link, you can download it right there.
Yeah. And you may hear all of that and be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to give four different, you know, individualized supplements. And a lot of parents just go sort of the multivitamin route too. And so that's an option as well. So, you know, we try to make it as easy as possible. And I do want to underscore the idea that this is not because you are feeding an insufficient diet. Omnivore parents also have to be concerned about nutrients of concern for diets as well. You know, iron deficiency is the most common nutrient deficiency regardless of diet. So it's not about the fact that you are feeding something that is inferior, but you do want to ensure that you're getting the nutrients perhaps that are not as commonly found in certain whole food plant-based foods, and making sure those are in the diet.
And now for a very important message. Hey mama, if you are feeling frustrated about mealtime battles, worried that your child isn't eating enough or eating enough vegetables, afraid that your child is going to get some awful deficiency or disease because of the lack of diversity in their diet, I wrote a book that might be for you. A Parent's Guide to Intuitive Eating, How to Raise Kids Who Love to Eat Healthy is available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook through all major online booksellers. Did you know that most children are born with the innate ability to eat the appropriate amount of food to satisfy their hunger and support appropriate growth? Despite this, parents are still anxious and confused about how much and what to feed their children. In addition, many children are labeled as picky eaters or develop behaviors such as hiding and sneaking food. There's also a growing epidemic of dieting behaviors and eating disorders beginning at alarmingly young ages. In my book, you'll learn the 5 pillars of healthy eating, how to apply intuitive eating through all the stages of development, lifestyle habits that support healthy eating and body image, troubleshooting and problem solving for picky eaters, overeating, and dieting behaviors, how to create and foster a healthy body image in your children, how exploring your own body image and relationship with food will help raise an intuitive eater, and what foods to offer your child at different stages of development. A Parent's Guide to Intuitive Eating, How to Raise Kids Who Love to Eat Healthy, available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook through all major online booksellers. Are you ready for a fresh approach to feeding your child? For more information, visit dryami.com/book. And now, back to the episode.
Well, and especially if we're talking about DHA, which is found in seafood, mm-hmm. I don't know about the majority of toddlers that you know that are omnivores, but the majority that I know are not eating 2 servings of seafood a week to get the recommended amount of DHA in their diet. So it's really, we're talking about things that really apply to all children and all pregnant women and all lactating women. But I just want to say that we understand how all of these numbers can be confusing maybe to someone who isn't this dietitian brain who likes to play with numbers all the time. And in our book, we actually have a tear out, create your own supplement regimen that's like a kind of create your own adventure where you can take into account how much milk your kid is drinking, for instance, fortified milk, and figure out what supplements that you should be providing and what amounts. And you can take it with you to the grocery store and make it real easy.
Nice. Create your own vitamin adventure. I was just going to follow up on. Go ahead,
so,
Alex.
Yeah. No. I was just going to follow up on the DHA thing as well, because we kind of started this conversation a little bit talking about the environment. And I think that, you know, overfishing is a huge problem. We do not have enough fish to recommend that everyone eats 2 servings of fish a week anyways. I think that is a that is not nutritionally sound when it comes to the health of the planet. And there's other things that fish also contain. You know, they contain mercury, they contain dioxins, they contain other environmental pollutants that we want to, you know, limit, especially in developing brains. And so I think that for a lot of parents, a DHA supplement that is algae-based feels like a safer way anyways, even if they're open to eating fish.
Yeah. Well, even the kids that are eating fish are not eating sardines and salmon and anchovies. They're eating fish sticks, which are fried, and who knows what's in there, or fried shrimp. You know, they're eating a bunch of fried fish that aren't even high in omega-3 fatty acids.
Right.
So, exactly. I mean, I know because I asked them what they eat, and I know what I ate when I was a kid, and I was not some kind, I did not eat those high omega-3 fish when I did. It was just like fish sticks and fried shrimp. Yeah. Fried catfish, because I grew up in Texas too. So with hush puppies, which was my favorite part.
I love hush puppies.
I think that this is, you know, I don't think it's too much. And just like going back to the natural thing, even just talking to my families about vitamin D, sometimes I have to have this conversation. It's also risk benefit. Mm-hmm. Like maybe if we were outside long enough, almost naked, you know, we could get enough vitamin D.
Right.
Here where I live in Washington State, where our latitude is, in the winter, you would have to be outside, arms and legs fully exposed for 2 hours in the middle of the day to get enough vitamin D conversion in your skin. Who's going to do that? But even if in the summer, when it's warm, you would do that. Hello, sunburns, you know? So it's like, you know, so we're trying to balance. What do we want long term for our bodies? I don't want wrinkles. I don't want skin cancer. So I'm going to wear my sunblock. I'm going to wear my sleeves and I'm going to take my vitamin D, you know? So we kind of have to make some of those choices as well. So this is really great. I know that you said in your guide, you have some supplements that you like and, you know, you're not sponsored or anything by these companies, but do you have any general advice for families that are looking for reliable and quality supplements?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing that we look at is sort of ignoring what's on the front of the label. There are a lot of marketing claims that sound really good, right? Like, you know, we see things like immunity or brain health, and you know, I get it, right? Who doesn't want your child to have a more heightened, perhaps, immune system, or you know, more better brain health, right? Like, those are all sort of buzzwords, but I think really sort of turning over the label and looking at exactly what's in it is a good guide. In our supplement guide, we do sort of break down like what to look for, because you know, just because a supplement, let's say, has B12, a lot of times it's not enough, or they have vitamin D but it's only 25%. If the reason that you're taking that multivitamin is to get enough of these sort of key nutrients, well, then you want to pick an option that you're not having to sort of double up on other things with. So that's the first recommendation I will say. And then for our strict vegan parents, I will also say, you know, just sort of perhaps if the sourcing isn't really clear on the bottle, or they don't have that, you know, cruelty-free or vegan label on it, to reach out to the manufacturer. You know, they're really usually easy to DM on Instagram or email and just sort of say, hey, you know, what is the source of this? Because we know that formulations change often, especially with, you know, price changes in the market and sourcing, you know, sometimes your favorite supplement can perhaps change. And so if you're curious about that at all, or you don't see that label, then we do recommend reaching out. And the reason I say that is because we've noticed over time certain ones that we recommended have changed their sourcing, and a lot of that is just due to pricing. So, and then sweeteners, that's the other thing I would say. A lot of kids' vitamins, especially the liquid ones, are going to have some type of added sweetener. It's hard to find ones that are very limited in added sugar, or that don't use, you know, sort of questionable artificial sweeteners. Yeah.
And I think that's a balance too, because what I tell my families is,
yes,
doesn't matter what vitamin you have if your kid's not going to be willing to take it. So you have to kind of find one that they're willing to take.
And I will preface that by saying a lot of the ones in our guides do have some, I think, like stevia or monk fruit. I mean, we're not against it. We're just trying to find the ones that are not
honestly, you know, candy. There's nothing that's perfect out there. This is a big gripe that Alex and I have, and hopefully one day there will be.
PBJ supplement company.
I mean, hint, hint. And that's why we made this guide, really, is because people asked us so frequently and we're like, oh my gosh, I can't even give you like the long, huge answer that I have to this, which is that there isn't one that I love. Like there isn't a multivitamin out there that has like the perfect amounts of everything we want. So we poured everything into this guide and explained everything about it. Next to all of our multivitamins, we say, needs a little bit more D, needs a little bit more of this, so that you know that you can kind of like take this information and then decide what works best for you.
Yes.
Like, I think, Alex, you provide a multivitamin, correct? For some things?
I used to. Now that Van's older, yeah, I do individual
I do individual dosing because that's my obsessive brain where I like to like get all my tinctures out, but other parents might not. They just want to give a multivitamin and we've got it explained in there because, yeah, it is the way it is. And like you said, you got to do what works, what the kid's going to actually take, what you're going to remember to provide, what makes the most sense affordably. So the most important thing is that they get that. They get that supplement one way or another.
And our guide, sort of last thing I'll say, is really meant to empower, you know, because not every child has the same diet. And we really want you to, Whitney and I are really about the why, you know, obviously, gosh, if you listen to us, I mean, we talk a lot about things and like to explain them because I'm the kind of person that if you just tell me something, well, no, I want to know why. What is the mechanism? And so I feel like in our guide, we try to really explain these nutrients, how much they need, where the dietary sources are. So parents can say, oh my gosh, you know, my kid eats all of those foods. I don't need this supplement. Okay, great. Then you don't need it. But it's nothing that we can sort of say blanket to all of our followers. This is the perfect amount for every child because that's just inaccurate. And so we really want to empower you as the parent to be able to say, okay, I want to do this. And here's sort of the guide that's going to help shepherd me through what options are going to be good for my child and which ones I perhaps don't need.
I love it. No, that's such great advice. And I'm just smiling, thinking of Whitney and all of her little tinctures and her kids having to sit through all that. Because, you know, it's hard. And as my children get older, I can't even get my husband. Like, finally, we got it to the point where I have like a pill box and it has, and at dinner, I'm like commanding. I'm like, everybody, did you take your vitamins? You know, like to everybody, because otherwise we will have bottles of vitamins because I have it on auto ship. And I'm like, oh my God, we barely went through because they have their version. I have my version. And so now that's, I have so to be really on top of it because otherwise nobody's taking vitamins except for me. Mm-hmm. I have my routine. I'm very, very routine. Same. And so you have to find what works. And I think I finally found. And
I come around box, the breakfast table.
I can tell when what days they missed so I can shake my finger.
That's smart.
I think I must have the weirdest kid. I mean, Vander every morning wakes up and is so excited for his vitamins and drops. Like, even, I mean, he does. Like, he's a very routine child. But, like, you know, I'll say, like, you ready for breakfast? No, we need our vitamins and drops first. And he, like, sits on the table and he, like, makes sure Emery gets hers. So,
they're all liquid. Weird. So, you know, I've got my 5-month-old who's getting her liquid D drops. And I've got Caleb who's got his 4 different kinds. I think we're down to 3 now because of some reason. But, and then I've got my husband who he's got a liquid one too that we just got, and it's a pump and he does not like taking his. But my trick to get Caleb to do it, I go, okay, Caleb, who's getting their drops first? And he'll be like, Daddy gets his. Ella gets hers. Otherwise, my husband would never take them. Like the same thing. We had all these pill bottles. And I was like, when was the last time did you take your supplements, Abe? And he's like, I don't even remember. And so I'm around the table squirting everything in everybody's mouth every morning.
I feel you. I know exactly how that goes. All right, real quick. Yeah. What are y'all's favorite family meals?
We do lentil tacos a lot. Honestly, it's one of the few ways my son eats lentils, and everyone loves them, and they're easy.
We do quesadillas a lot. It's one of the few ways Caleb will eat his beans, and I can also squeeze in a bunch of veggies in there. Quick and easy option.
Get that beta carotene.
That's in our book, actually. Yeah.
I love it. No, the recipe's in y'all's book. That is why I need to be your child. Or I could just take turns. I can, you know, just go. Could be like split custody between Alex and Whitney. I'm cool with that. What do you wish more parents knew?
I wish so many things. Where do I start? I wish more parents knew that you don't have to stress so much. I think our DMs are filled
with parents who, and I get it, like it's hard being a parent. And I think that, you know, in this day, especially, we have so much more information than our parents had before us. But I just wish that parents didn't stress perhaps so much on the things that really don't matter as much and are sort of taking that long view approach instead of that day-to-day, meal-to-meal hyper-focus that I think kind of takes a lot of the joy out of feeding.
I wish more plant-based parents specifically knew that it can be a challenge, it can be a learning curve, at least in the beginning, for any diet you follow. And we talked about this in the mm-hmm. beginning. If you want to feed your child an optimal diet, it's going to be more work than just feeding them whatever. And that doesn't matter if you're plant-based or you're an omnivore, because I think, like we said, plant-based diets get a bad rap of being really hard and really challenging to follow. And it's like, no, anytime you decide to make more positive lifestyle choices in any regard of your, in any different aspect of your life, or whether that be any different kind of diet, it takes a little bit of consideration. But it doesn't have to be challenging. Once you learn the ins and outs, it becomes second nature.
I love it. So positive. I just love the message that you both have. This has been such a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for taking time to talk about all of these things and to launch your book. Thank you so much for taking the time to write that. Where can listeners connect with you and find all of your goodies and purchase your book and all of that fun stuff?
We're really active over on Instagram, so you can find us there at Plant Based Juniors. You can grab our book at the plantbasedbabyandtoddler.com or plantbasedbabyandtoddler.com. That's also the same title of the book, and that's available wherever books are found. And then our website is also jam-packed with a lot of long-form blog posts that sort of dive into some of the topics that we talked about today, and that's at plantbasedjuniors.com.
And that's where the supplement guide is, right, at Plant Based Juniors?
And all of our free guides. Yep. Our PB3 plate, our, you know, milk myths, our fertility handouts, our supplement guides. We really try to make as much of our content completely free as possible.
Awesome. I love it. Well, if you could leave us with one call to action for the week, what one thing can we do this week to make feeding our children more joyful?
Yeah, I would say focus on what they do than what they don't. You know, I think that really sort of shifting that mindset of like, wow, you know, look where my child has come, or look at the foods he does enjoy, or look at the foods he does eat, is a much more positive, joyful experience than worrying so much about perhaps the items that he doesn't. You know, we post what our kids ate a few times a week over on our Instagram page, and we always get comments like, I wish my kid ate like that. Well, I wish my kid ate a lot of things, but, you know, I can't focus on that. I have to focus on the things that he does enjoy.
Also, if you're looking at those, make sure to read the caption, because we put which parts they don't actually ate. And a lot of the time it's like one thing in the photo. I will say, to tag on to that, just, you know, keep in mind the division of responsibility, your job and your child's job. It's your job to provide these nutritious options at regular intervals. And it's your child's job to decide if they're hungry and if they want to eat them. And just keeping that in mind can take a lot of pressure off of you. And feeling like you are not, if your child doesn't eat what's on the plate, that you're somehow failing, knowing that that's not your role. It's not your role to force them into eating food. So that helps me chill out and enjoy the feeding process more.
Yes.
Yeah. Feeding kids should be fun. I mean, you know, it's so wonderful. I love watching my kids eat.
I love watching Emery eat too. Her daughter is the cutest.
She loves food. She is so, and like, she squeals when she eats. But, you know, it really is joyful. I mean, we think about it like we're introducing our children to these, you know, beautiful, abundant foods. Like, it's really fun and exhilarating. And I think that, you know, sort of stepping back and having that joyful experience makes it joyful for your child as well. You know, we want these sort of mealtime memories to be enjoyable and to be positive.
Yes. Well, this has been fantastic, ladies. Thank you so much. And when is the book released?
May 18th.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for everything. I will continue to be a super fan to all of your work. And I know that my listeners, if they aren't already, will be as well. And I hope to see you soon again. But until then, have a very plantastic day.
Thanks, Dr. Yami.
Thank you.
Hey, veggie lover. I hope that you loved today's episode. Will you take a second and do me a huge favor? Please subscribe to my podcast so that you never miss an episode. You're the reason I'm here, and I want to share it all with you. Thank you for listening, and have a plantastic day.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.